The demand and indeed the urgent need for satellite services in this region is nearly insatiable. The most serious issue facing government and industry are lowering the cost of those services so they can begin to address this pent-up demand. That's one of the topics that our first speaker is going to address today. Professor Michael J. Miller is director of the Institute for Telecommunications Research at the University of South Australia. He is director of a team of 90 researchers specializing in satellite communications research. He's also the deputy director of the Cooperative Research Center for Satellite Systems. Professor Miller.
Thank you, Chairman, and good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. It's obvious that this 49th IAF is coming to a close, and it's a great honour to be asked at this time to comment on some of the significant issues that have been identified during the Congress. What do they tell us about the values coming out of space programs? What clues do we get about future directions? And what can we expect that the might be the impact of future space programs? Now, firstly, I must admit to you that I've never been to an International Astronautical Federation Congress before this one, and I certainly expect that it'll not be my last, because I've just been dazzled by the magnificent array and inspiring array of the sort of the space research that's being reported, the space exploration activities and the space applications that people are starting to think about. But secondly, I must declare my personal bias and limited perspective, as in that, as the chairman said, my research field has sort of been narrowly confined to that commercial area of space, namely satellite communications. So you'll not be surprised if I confine my few remarks to some matters particularly related to that field, but also on how that field may impact on the future development of other space-related fields. I guess this Congress has left me with two lasting impressions. The first and most compelling impression I have from the many sessions that I've attended and so forth is that there is undoubtedly a trend for space projects to become international ventures, shall we say global ventures. That is, international collaboration and cooperation seems to be just about becoming the norm for future projects. And I guess the current plans for things like the International Space Station are classical examples of how no one nation wants to foot the whole bill, and probably it's true to say that no one nation really has all the expertise or facilities that are necessary to make that all work. But I think that this Congress has demonstrated that not only will collaboration and cooperation be the hallmark of major space projects, but also of the smaller projects. I attended a paper this morning, for example, about a space technology research vehicle, a little tiny thing weighing 100 kilograms, on which there are to be 30 experiments flying, and as far as I could tell from the multiple flags that were on a certain view graph put up at one time, about 30 countries involved. I think this is sort of telling us something about how we need to think in terms of our planning and trying to convince our funding agencies as to how space projects are going to go in the future. As another example of how critical collaboration has become, and taking an example in this country, it is only in recent times that we've managed to convince the Australian government to establish a form of space program in terms of our new Cooperative Research Centre for Satellite Systems. And in fact, it could not get approval from the Australian government until we'd managed to get together a collaborative group of key universities, key government defence and non-defence research agencies, and a number of industry partners, all of whom signed agreements to say that they would commit certain resources to this program and collaborate together and share the intellectual property. And I think that, again, is a signal for how important this is going to become. I wonder if the chairman would mind putting the switch on for me. I thought also international collaboration is going to become a hallmark of little tiny projects, like our first project that the CRC will engage in. And as many of you would have heard, there have been one or two papers on a 50-kilogram satellite that is really just to illustrate or demonstrate for us some of the research ventures that we're engaged in. But I thought it's interesting to note that this little satellite, as you see at the bottom, has quite a wide range of experiments. And in that activity, we are already going to be engaging with a British organisation, SIL, you see up the top here, who will be providing the platform. We'll be getting assistance from UCLA and NASA in the United States in relation to magnetometer and GPS onboard systems. And we expect we're in negotiation with an agency in Japan for other assistance in respect of other aspects of the satellite. And I just use this as an example to illustrate how, even in a very small experiment like this will become, this international collaboration is clearly the norm, and it's something that we have to get used to. So this led to me to reflect on just how the IAF Congress is actually a superb vehicle for fostering this sort of collaboration. And I've been very impressed by the way in which there are so many opportunities for international representatives to get together. Just as a small question mark, though, I've been a little surprised at how relatively few contributions have been made by universities from around the world. And it does concern me as to whether, in fact, we need somehow to link more of the university research activity into this area in international congresses such as this one, or maybe linking them into this very Congress. And if indeed it is a matter for our governments to be persuaded that they need to put money into international programs, I guess we need to try to persuade more government decision makers to be present. And I'm thinking not necessarily those who work in ministries of science, but I think we need to have decision makers from the Foreign Affairs Department and departments where international collaboration is important. The second compelling impression I have from this 49th IAF is that commercial realities are increasingly constraining what space projects can actually get started. How many times during this Congress have we heard the phrase faster, better, cheaper? And I mean, even though there's usually an explanation that all three of those things are equal, the feeling you get is that the cheaper is the driver. And better really means less complex, we heard in a session earlier this week. And so it seems that cost is going to be a continual problem for people in the space business. The one area of space activity where faster, better, cheaper is not necessarily paramount is, as the chairman said earlier, that of satellite communications. During this Congress, we've heard a number of papers about how the demand for future mobile satellites and other services seems likely to ensure that there are markets worth billions of dollars to reward the space companies that can get involved in this area. I mean, it's obvious that there have been several attempts to raise finance for investments of the order of multiple billions of dollars, and they've been successful attempts for the systems such as Globalstar and the ICO system, and of course Iridium is funded. In a sense, these are sort of low Earth orbit or non-geostationary orbit satellites. And I guess for many of the traditional satellite communications people, they're somewhat upstarts in relation to their geo counterparts. But we've also heard lots of papers in this Congress about new initiatives in the geostationary area. I thought I'd just like to point out that the satellite communications business is changing just about as rapidly as any other part of the space program. And if I could just have the second slide. I've only got two slides, so this will be the last one, but I just thought it comes back again to the little experiment that we're going to carry out as one of the experiments on our small satellite, and it just illustrates, I think, some of the new services that satellite communications are going to offer people, and which you can try out on little 50-kilogram satellites or of course on much more commercial, larger ones. But it's become quite obvious to me from listening to the papers during this Congress that multimedia techniques are going to be vital in the future. The ability to download image information and so forth to portable laptops and other forms of devices. A whole range of techniques associated with internet access are an obvious opportunity, a big market, and that seems to be undoubted. services in new frequency bands. The Ka band, most of you would know, is a band in the 20 to 30 gigahertz range, where technology is still under development. Difficulties with propagation and so forth in some senses are still to be solved. And bands even higher than that represent tremendous opportunities for expansion of services into bands not previously occupied. Low-powered handheld terminals generally demand that we work in low Earth orbits with our satellites, although not always, as we've seen from other papers. But I think that one of the things that we will find is that there will be a new generation of links, the inter-satellite link technology, that's going to have to link together our low Earth orbit satellites and our geostationary brothers that are some 35,000 kilometres or so above them, in order that we'll have a network of constellations so that each constellation can add the services that it's best capable of providing in a total sort of structure. So there is obviously great commercial potential in this aspect of space. By the way, I was on the Australian Space Council when it existed a few years ago, and one of the things we commissioned was a major study into the commercial possibilities for small LEO services, little services like messaging and paging and so forth. And this study was carried out by a British organisation on our behalf, and we studied five countries in this region, and we were amazed to find that paging services, for example, if they could be established in these five countries, looked like they could net well over $1 billion a year as a specialist service being offered in these countries. And so there are not just the standard telecommunications services, but there are many others that are obvious opportunities. Now, if satellite communications represents the only space projects that perhaps are truly commercially viable, and if many other worthwhile, good space projects are languishing through lack of funds, I'm led to wonder what we as the IAF community might do about this. Now, I don't know, but most of you probably know that there's an election on in this country tomorrow, and one of the issues that's being debated is the question of taxation. And I guess that may have been part of the reason that brought me around to thinking, why not promote the idea of a space tax? I wonder, in other words, whether it's time for us to start persuading our governments that at least some of the income that they derive or they're going to derive from licensing satellite communication services, selling this precious spectrum, and they're starting to realise just how much money they can make out of spectrum, and various other forms of government-derived income, should be directly returned to support other space projects in the public good. After all, we demand that our road taxes go back into research into improvement of our roads, our energy taxes go into better, cleaner fuel resources. So I'll leave you with this thought. Perhaps we ought to be trying to convince governments that the commercial gains from space communications should be better reflected back in support of some of the superb space-related projects that we've heard about in this 49th IAF. Thank you.